kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Fuck it. Do it live.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. We have another reviews episode lined up for you, and we're switching things up a little bit this week. We're leading things off. Chris Taylor, how are you doing?
Oh my God. What am I doing in this part of the
You're
podcast?
You're here at the beginning of the show.
What?
Yeah, how crazy is that?
That's almost as crazy as anything else.
It's almost as crazy as Pernell being at the end of the show.
Oh, is that how it's going?
Yeah. I just flipped you guys.
I like the front of the show. It's nice and roomy. It's pretty cool. I might pay to upgrade next time.
Yeah, now you get to chit chat for a little bit too.
Oh, right. That sounds good.
So how was your weekend?
Oh, pretty good. Still doing the Twitch thing. I finally started my Skyrim build that I've been really looking forward to starting, and that is the fork and knife build.
Yeah, I've seen some of that.
The naked cutlerist. So I'm beating... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, what is the big gimmick with this build?
Okay, so what it is that I am playing through the game of The Elder Scrolls V with a character who can only use a knife and fork as a weapon, an equipable knife and fork, and he is also naked. So... And I'm actually, it's not just one of those things like, you know, beating Dark Souls with just your fists or something like that, which, you know, more power to those folks. But it's not an attrition thing. I'm actually building this character. It is, and as of the last stream, I found out it actually is viable. You can
really?
You can actually do some damage and get yourself taken care of with a fork and knife and naked. So thanks, Todd Howard.
That is like, what do you do with this character? What kind of abilities do you have? What kind of, like, how do you actually kill people with a fork and knife? Are you just crazy overleveled?
No, because that's the thing, is that you can't overlevel the character. Forks and knives. Okay, so a fork, they're both roughly the size of daggers, you know, actually a little shorter, but not as short as barehanded, which, you know, that correlates with real life. A fork can only do 1 point of damage, and a knife can only do 2 points of damage. They're among the weakest things in the entire game. Even practice arrows that do zero damage are still, their damage is determined by your bow, which to the minimum is 7, and that's the very, very beginning. So these are by far the weakest thing. Even your bare fists do, at least 4 damage. Like, no matter what. So
you're weaker being equipped than you would be unequipped.
Yes, I am weaker with this fork and knife than I would be with my bare mitts. And then that is to say, having no clothing is an additional challenge. But anyway, I'll get back to the fork and knife. They're not determined by the one-handed perk like all other one-handed weapons. So you can't increase the damage. And even if you could, the most you could get is double. And then it's like 2 and 4 damage, and then you're back to, you know, almost as good as nothing. So what I did, like the fork and knife cannot be smithed, like, you know, as humorous as that would be. But they can, however, be enchanted.
Oh, so that's the loophole.
That's the loophole. So that's where this character comes in. If you enchant them with destruction magic and you're really good with your perks, you can add up to about 200 extra damage in fire damage or, you know, elsewise. I have to be able to beat this game, so I have to be able to take it down a dragon, so I'm gonna have to make a lightning set of fork and knife as well.
How many sets of forks and knives are in the game?
It's like about 6, but I'm going to get through it with just 3.
Only 3?
There's 3 that I have planned. I have my starter set, which is what I just completed on my last stream. The knife is enchanted with lots of fire, with fire and lightning, and it's called the hot butter knife. And then I forget what I named my fork. Damn it. Well, I know what I'm going to name my forks later. It's going to be very punny. But anyways, so my fork, here's the other thing.
Oh, you're going to tease us with puns and then not tell us them?
I have to load up my game because I don't remember.
Ugh.
Well, I mean, you know, it's going to be very forked up is that kind of thing. The fork. So I actually had the idea to, because the fork is the slightly weaker instrument and also because it again correlates with real life, I decided to enchant my fork not only with fire damage, but also with paralysis. So it holds down the enemy while I cut them with the knife.
Oh my god.
Yeah, I put a lot of planning into this character. Yep. So I have a paralyzing fork that does fire damage and a knife that does fire and lightning damage. And that, those combined, I've been able to take down standard enemies. So right now I'm working on my defense because, you know, there's that whole other challenge to this game is that I cannot wear clothes or armor. The game has to consider you naked, which means nothing on your body. So you can wear gloves and helmets and boots, and you actually look way more naked when you do, because, you know, you get the little loincloth, but, you know, if you actually put on, like, armor, you know, boots and gloves, like, you actually are like, oh, this is actually indecent.
And I mean, there's a lot of snow. You don't want to get frostbite on your feet.
Exactly, yeah, just all the other parts.
It's a safety measure.
Yeah. So the lack of armor also means a lack of certain enchantments that you can do that help reduce the cost of the spells, the magic that I have put into my cutlery. So there is a couple of things that I'm planning on doing about that, because by the end, I should have a really superpowered fork and knife that I can take down dragons and the final boss with. That actually can be infinite use. There's a way that you can actually cancel out magic use in at least two schools, and you do it through enchanting, and it's perfectly within the bounds of the game. Like, it's a common practice. But without armor, which is where you have to put that spell reduction capacity, then I do have to utilize one very silly glitch I've never done before, and that's where you can actually... So you know the Falmer, who are the not zombie-like, but they're like the blind snow elves that are in all the dungeons, and they're creepy, and they do the golem noises all the time.
Yeah.
Okay, so sometimes they wear a helmet that they made out of a bug's face, and that helmet is glitched to where you can wear it and a circlet, which is like a crown item. And so if you combine those two, then you can actually get the... You know, because your maximum, without cheating, your maximum spell reduction cost is 29%. So you need four pieces of armor to get 100%. Not four pieces of armor, but headgear, necklace, ring, and body armor. So without the body armor, I'm just stacking the helmets, and therefore I can get the same result that I would with a normal character while my character is still completely nude.
That works.
I'm very good at Skyrim.
I can tell.
So apart from a slight glitch of the wearing two helmets at once kind of thing, which, by the way, you could do in real life. That's, you know, you can wear a thing and wear another thing over the thing.
Yeah, you can. Easily.
Yeah. So with that, I'm making the nude fork and knife character a legit character I can actually beat the game with. And by the way, I'm playing on Legendary, which is the hardest difficulty the game has naturally.
Yeah, so, you don't fuck around and play pussy crybaby easy mode like Cole and I. You go all the way.
Yeah, I definitely do. And, you know, that gives enemies like thousands of hit points. So, you know, like at the best of times, Legendary is challenging, but with a fork and knife and naked, it is it's a thing to behold. And of course, wrapping all that up, my character's name for this build, because, you know, I love to create good names, he's called Jimmy Buffet. Yeah.
That is beautiful.
Thank you. And yeah, that's what I've been streaming. If anybody wants to check that out in the coming, you know, weeks, my Twitch handle is Liar Exaggerate. like the neighbor in Earthbound.
Yes.
And you can catch Joe there sometimes.
I am there quite a bit. I show up. Usually after my streams, I'll drop by, or if it's late at night in your stream and I'll drop by.
Yeah, yeah.
So and I try to show up every now and then.
You actually gave away a couple of games on my on one of my streams, so I'm sure that's not going to be every time, but, you know, folks who are thirsty for the free games can come check it out.
I mostly have an Xbox code, so that doesn't really hit your demographic too much.
Oof. Well, I don't know. I don't know what my people have. I know I don't have one. I need to get one.
Yeah, I figure if you're streaming on PS4, you're going to have a lot of PS4 viewers.
That's true.
At least in my brain, that's how it works out, because you could watch streams through the console, and they usually advertise them, so I don't know.
I get a lot of friend requests from what I can only guess are, like, 13-year-old boys on my PS4, because all of their, like, icons are, like, Fortnite stuff.
Oh, God.
So they're, like, they follow me on Twitch, which is great, but then they friend me on PS4, which is bad. And then they message me, they'll actually pop into my chat and tell me to accept the ad request while I'm still streaming. And I'm like, I'm playing this game for people. I don't have time to go back to my menu, accept you as a friend, and then come back here and start my stream all over again.
Yeah, and then deal with messages while you're trying to play.
Yeah, exactly. They do send me messages too. So if you're 13 years old and listening to this, don't friend me on PS4. That's a... It's an uncourteous thing to do, although I will add you back because I need more viewers, so just try to learn some etiquette in terms of... I really feel like some people don't have a lot of etiquette when it comes to streamers.
That's true. I've dealt with a bunch of assholes on my stream already.
Nice.
There's assholes everywhere.
Yeah. What can you do?
I don't know. We could review games.
Oh, yeah. I guess we could do that.
Yeah, you got three to talk about this week. You ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about this week is called Pillars of Eternity Complete Edition, developed by Obsidian Entertainment, published by Versus Evil, released August 8th on the Switch for $49.99. The original award-winning RPG from the masters at Obsidian Entertainment is finally in the palm of your hands. Chris, tell us about Pillars of Eternity.
Pillars of Eternity Complete Edition.
Like, on the Switch, that massive game packed all the way down into the palm of your hands.
Yes, I know. It's crazy what they're doing with Switch. I mean, I started on Skyrim on the Switch, so I guess I kind of like every time something big comes out on Switch, I'm like, well, naturally. but yeah, I actually read this like review once about somebody talking about getting stuff on the Switch and like, you know, it's GPU and stuff. And yeah, it's actually kind of challenging, but it's pretty incredible. Anyways, Pillars of Eternity. So this is a, of course, this game came out a few years ago. I think it was 2015. I don't have my Wikipedia up in front of me. Y'all go ahead and fact check and feel free to pop into chat sometime and tell me how wrong I am. Or the YouTube comments, even better.
Yes, definitely.
Yes. Like, comment, and subscribe if you think I'm wrong.
And call us racist things. That's always fun, too.
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. I mean, anyways, so, Pillars of Eternity. So this is a game that actually started on Kickstarter, and they definitely will tell you this on the splash screen at the front of the game, as sure as they will call themselves the masters at Obsidian in their own self-description. Yeah, because I think they have to write that, don't they?
I don't know who writes it. It might be a PR company.
Oh, maybe. Either way, I mean, look, spoiler alert, I'm not going to disagree with them on that. So, it's actually started on Kickstarter, and it got a record number of monies thrown at it by 77,000 people.
Damn.
It got funded in excess of, like, over $4 million, I think. And the sequel did even better, which that's actually coming to Switch as well later on, so yay. But Pillars of Eternity is basically, the way they describe it is that it's inspired by games like Baldur's Gate and by games like Icewind Dale and things like that. So your isometric, you know, click here and make the people run over there, click on enemies and defeat them automatically, and, you know, roam around and read lots and lots of text. certainly Baldur's Gate, at least the Dark Alliance games and Baldur's Gate, I beat both of them with a roommate like about 15 years ago. And those are some fun times. So I was really looking forward to getting a game that was like that, but actually more in-depth in story. And yeah, that's actually exactly what I found here. So Pillars starts off, you create a character, of course, and it, you know, gets you a hot beverage and like a blanket or something like that, because you're going to be creating this character for a while. not as much as a game like Wizardry, where you actually have to roll dice. And, you know, you have the reroll button that you just sit there and hit until you get the magical, like, top number, like the natural 20 or whatever. fortunately, they spare you that much. But you do have to, you have to select so much. So you pick your race, and every race has a sub-race, which is actually really cool. So you have humans, but where from? Which humans are these? There's not just one kind of human. And as you're reading through this list of stuff and you're reading these like terms that you've never heard before, you realize that although this is based in the tradition of like D&D and stuff, these are all new things. You know, they have these like these characters that are I can't remember the names. I'm not going to remember any names, by the way. You're just going to have to you're gonna have to look all this up. You'd have to sit there and wait for me to look at it in the actual game.
Yeah, there's a lot of names to keep track of.
But yeah, they have characters that are essentially half giants, and, you know, they're either blue or like yellow with orange, depending on where they're from. And they have this whole lore that, you know, comes from where they are. They have standard elves. Some elves are blue. Some elves are like wood elves, so they look more like humans. You know, a Legolas versus a Avatar. So, Avatar, nice. The James Cameron film.
Yeah. The
second highest grossing film of all time. Ooh. So you have them.
Suck and then at James Cameron.
Yeah, that's right. We got you. We know you listen to this show. We got you. So yeah, you have your different kind of elves. You know, you have halflings. You know, dwarves, and even characters that are basically like semi deities. Like they're kind of like elementals, but you know they come up with this whole other lore for them. So they're like. Kind of like ascended humans that are deity like, and they, you know, represent like fire or water or whatever. Once you pick that, then you pick where you're from, which it has this whole list of different places you can be from. And what it generally amounts to is that you get one bonus point in a certain stat depending on where you're from. So like you're from the one place, you get a +1 in dexterity, the one place a +1 in resolve. So like everything has a consequence in your character, like when you're making them. But it also comes with like just these paragraphs of text about like your background and things like that. And yeah, you just go on down the line, you pick your you know, your looks. There's like 79 character portraits, but generally you're gonna just pick the portrait that looks the most like your character model. You know, it's not like Skyrim where you just move sliders around, you know.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, your human is only going to have, like, 4 different faces they can pick from, and then you just pick a portrait to match. Or you could just pick a portrait of somebody that looks good. It kind of doesn't matter, because you're going to be looking at your character, who is a much smaller model on a isometric plane, and you're probably going to be covering their face up with a helmet or something.
Yeah.
So you can kind of do whatever you want there, really. And, of course, you name your character. I started off with my standby, Tilda Dunkaroos. but I eventually was like, okay, I actually kind of feel silly with my silly names, so I'm just gonna make up a name. I'm gonna make an elf rogue and then make her sound more realistic. So I can't remember what I called her, actually. Let me look right quick. Let's see. It's Galen Verona.
Nice.
Which, yeah, I just named her after it's an amalgamation of different names I like. So anyways, yeah, so with your rogue character, you can then pick, so they, like, have, different stats, and these stats, are a little different than your standard D&D stats. So, you know how sometimes, like, in certain D&D games, you'll have, like, you get this extra option, you can do this task if you have strength 20, you know, but if you have less than strength 20, you can't do this.
Yeah.
This game is full of that. So you'll be like having dialogue with a character, and of course it's branching path dialogues. You know, it tells you a whole bunch of stuff. It's either voice acted or not voice acted. It's kind of half and half. But that's okay because I usually just want to read anyway. Like I read faster than voice actors talk. So if all the text is on the screen, I kind of don't want them talking. I'm like, I'm way ahead of you here. But, sometimes the voice acting is actually good in this game though. So I actually, you know, I'm fine with it being there. But of course, like most things in this game, you can toggle it off. This game has such a myriad of options. It's nuts. Like, I spent so much time in the option menu. And, you know, I'll leave that for when you actually play this game. But yeah, so like, things like, you have like lore and you have mechanics and you have stealth and might and resolve and things like that. Well, stealth is a little different, actually. That's a direct battle thing. But in these overarching like things, they actually affect the game, not only how your character is able to do things. So let's say my character, Galen, was able to, I maximized her, her mechanics, because she was already rogue. So she got a bonus to mechanics. And then I picked the place where she was from to give her more dexterity. And then I, you know, I basically made her as mechanical as possible. And the reason is because she's a rogue, but I decided that she's really good at, disarming traps and lockpicking, which is generally what mechanics, does for you in the game. So anytime I come up to a treasure chest, I can just open it.
Nice. Like,
anything's locked, just open that shit. And if they're at a level higher than the lock, they don't even expend a lockpick. It's only when you get to a chest that's higher than your own level, then it'll be like, you can open this, but it's going to cost you 3 lockpicks. And you'll be like, yes, I want what's in there. And the other thing is that, like, with my first character, which was a fighter, I just kept stepping on traps. And I was like, God dang. So with this character, and then I realized that, you know, this character doesn't have to be a fighter. I don't have to create a, you know, it's not me against the world. You actually build a team in this game. So I was like, well, I'm going to be the person who, you know, disarms all the traps and all this other stuff. So, like I said, yeah, I dumped all my points into mechanics. And then during a certain, like, dialogue things, even within the story, even like unskippable story parts, there are certain options that'll appear and it'll have that stat, and then it also has some that appear that have like affiliations with certain guilds or certain groups, like the Royal Knights or something like that. I forget what they're actually called in the game, but if you are aligned with a certain group, then you can skip a bunch of like different dialogue tasks, or you know, be more present, or like you can identify the person as an ally if they're in that group. It's like all this different stuff, and so it's just really, really fascinating how well they tied all that together. And like I said, it's all evident from the very beginning of the game, because you have like this tutorial little thing that teaches you all the controls and all this stuff. Like you arrive in a camp and then you go off to find an herb to help your stomach because you have a stomach ache, and that's why everybody stopped. And you get back to the camp and find that it's been attacked, and then that's how you learn how to fight. And there's a guy that was the item seller before you left the camp. And you rescue him, but the very next thing that happens is that a thing called a Biawak, which is a soul storm, I guess. It's basically a storm that will rip your soul apart and also your body while it's at it.
Nice.
Mean stuff. Cute. Yeah, exactly. You have to escape it, and of course it has you escaping it in a story. Like, it just, you know, and the stories are done in this kind of parchment with charcoal drawings kind of stuff. Really cool stylized stuff. But it says, oh, this guy that you just rescued is, he's now coming at you as well, but oh, one of the enemies who was just pretending to be dead has suddenly grabbed him. And I'm like, really? They're about to die in a thing like this, and that's their priority? Oh, I'm gonna still get you. But anyways, it has you, so like, you know, basically what this serves is that, you know, this is a tense moment where, you know, you witness somebody getting ripped apart by this horrible thing. And, but if you happened to have rolled your character with dexterity of 12 or higher, you can actually throw a rock at the guy that grabbed the guy's leg and then, you know, knock him out and then save the guy at the last second.
Ooh.
Yeah, but only if you did that. Otherwise, he is going to die right then and there. So if you rescue him, he actually ends up in your party. And then your one companion that helped you find the herbs from earlier. So this guy's injured, and he's like, we have to rest, and then this is a tutorial on teaching you how to camp, which you use camps in order to restore your health, which is different than your endurance, and it gets, again, very complicated.
So it's a complex game.
Oh, so complex. He's like, we have to rest, and she's like, no, we can't rest because these looters are going to get us or somebody, you know, she's very paranoid. So if you choose to rest, the guy will, you know, feel better and he'll thank you for it, but the lady will have run off and gotten killed by a trap. So to save them both, you have to basically tell the guy, no, we're going to keep moving, and then, you know, proceed through the dungeon, unless you want her to die. Because the thing is, at the end of that dungeon, spoilers, they both die.
Because
it's a tutorial, and you have to start the game by yourself.
Oh, the tutorial kills everyone.
Yeah. Which I thought was just funny.
That's the beginning of the game. This is a massive, massive game.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. This is all, like, less than 1% of the game's total content, from what I can tell. I played this thing for 20 hours before I got to the main city in the middle of the map.
Good God.
And on the way, I usurped a king, like, from an actual village who was, like, you know, torturing people. I got through, like, you know, 5 different dungeons. I actually went and rescued my own stronghold. Which, the game, of course, at that point has you start at a stronghold where you can actually keep, like, all these, people that you collect throughout the game. Now, the game lets you actually collect people. You can actually hire them, just kind of pay to use the character creator and make yourself a custom party. Or, again, the game just keeps throwing, friendlies at you. And, that's a good thing because there is permadeath in this game.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So these characters who are all extremely complex, they all have different personalities. You can literally, from the menu, talk to them at any point in the game and have, like, a full-on branching conversation about what you're doing in that moment that changes all the time. And, like, all this different stuff. And yet, if you get killed, well, there's an option, of course, to help you out and not get killed permanently the first time. They're kind of like, oh, you get one last chance to go and rest. You know, the way I guess the game is supposed to properly be played is that basically if a character gets killed, they get killed and they're gone.
Yeah.
So it's, yeah, it's just nuts about that. But yeah, I could go on all day about the game's complexities.
The thing we want to know is because we've covered I don't know if we covered the game before or not. I don't remember. I think we did. Might have been Pillars 2 that we covered. Whatever.
That 500 episode forgetfulness there.
Oh, geez. I'm just getting old and stupid. That's my excuse.
Too.
But we know what the game is. How does it play on the Switch?
Well, so the game, I'd say it's really smooth on the Switch. The thing that impressed me the most is that it looks great in handheld mode. A game with this much information on the screen at all time could, and other games have suffered from this. They have the whole thing where the text is too small and you just can't read it.
Yeah.
When you're in portable mode, because a lot of these folks don't think about, I guess, when they're porting to make the text like a good size. Well, this game actually has really good readable text all throughout, and it looks really great on the Switch's screen. The only real complaints I had about this one were some various graphical glitches and bugs that I ran into. I'm not sure if those are present in the original game, but basically it's things like, if you put an item in your inventory, sometimes the picture of the item changes into the picture of the item next to it, or it just becomes garbage graphics, and you kind of have to, like, you know, either restart or, you know, just live with it.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's just a weird thing like that, and also the game crashed on me a couple of times, but honestly, large games on the Switch always, like, they tend to crash sometimes.
Yeah.
I had that problem with Skyrim for sure. And
I was gonna say, if you can make it through Skyrim with all the bugs and glitches they have on there, I'm sure you were fine with Pillars.
Yeah, yeah, Pillars is fine. Just keep saving it, because, you know. And it does have a little bit of a limit on save files. I think it's about 6 or 7 that they'll let you have, which kind of helps in the sense that, you know, you can't just save scum your way through the game. If something happens, maybe just try and live with the consequences.
Yeah, be a man. Suck it up. Deal with it.
Buck up. But yeah, you know, I just have a couple that I scroll through, so it's not a problem. But I did notice once I made my second character and started, like, piling on the saves, it was like, nope, you're done. I was like, oh, okay. But, man. As far as that goes, like, this game looks really, really good. You know, it's because it's isometric, it's not so much all in the character models. The characters are just going to look like, you know, basic models. And that actually kind of helps because you don't want too much detail in something so small, especially when the backgrounds look as good as they do, which they look fantastic in this. And yeah, music's great. I mean, just all around, the whole package of it is really attractive. The main meat of this thing, though, is just the sheer amount of options and text and customizability and challenge. It's really hard. but fortunately, the complete edition comes with the expansions, which the expansions include a difficulty level called Story Time, which basically makes like all the roles kind of go to your favor. So you can still get killed, but it's just kind of from being dumb rather than, well, you didn't roll this correctly, so luck is not on your side.
That sounds good. I like when games let me have the luck in my favor instead of the AI always getting the good rolls.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, it reduces the amount of time between all those text blocks that you're going to be happily reading. Again, also, like Skyrim, this game has, like, freaking books, like, everywhere, and they're all written. Like, they're at least several paragraphs.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it really is. What was I going to say, though, about... Oh, also with the expansions. Oh, of course, the expansions, you get... what was it called? Winter... White something? God, I can't remember names. You get both of the expansions. White Marsh, I think is what it was. You get 1 and 2 with this one. And those also include a higher difficulty level. So if you're like me with Skyrim and you're into the legendary stuff, this is the version to get because it's going to have the what is it called? The Road to Hell or something like that. I forget what it's called.
Oh, God. That sounds welcoming.
Oh, yeah. They have such great names in this game.
So it sounds like a really, really good package.
Yeah, I think so. Now, I'm not sure. Did they say there's going to be a physical version of this game?
I believe so. I thought there was.
To Google. Pillars of Eternity physical. I just want to know because, let's see. Release date. How y'all liking that dead air out there?
I'm loving it. I love having, the only thing showing up on GameStop is for the second game, so it might be digital only.
Yeah, it might be. Well, either way, yeah, I was going to say you know, make sure you got your larger card in there because this is a 15 gig download.
Oh, that's a big one.
I think that's actually bigger than Skyrim. I'm not sure exactly though because I have Skyrim physical. But anyways, yeah, I think that this game is absolutely worth a purchase for any RPG fan, especially ones who like to get involved in lore. Because this one's got like pretty much all your bases covered. I mean, you can be an absolute bastard in this game if you want. You can be the good guy. You can even run it pacifist because almost every battle is avoidable if you're smart. And of course, you can get those stats up like lore and things like that. Like lore helps you in the game read scrolls, but in dialogue, it helps you know the background of who's attacking you. So you're like, oh, I know about your people. You're this such and such. So you actually can't do this by, you know, your own word of law. And they're like, oh, crap, you're right. It's like things like that. Again, the depth in this game, it's just, oh, you could swim in it.
Nice. Well, $50, your overall verdict.
Oh, yeah, $50. I would have bought this by now for sure. This is exactly the kind of thing I like. Yeah, I think, you know, the only person who might be turned off by this is somebody who's looking for straight-up action RPG, because, you know, you really do, I mean, as much as you set up your characters, and you will spend a lot of time setting up your characters, ultimately, I mean, it is that when you get into an encounter, you're just watching them run in and do their stuff. You have kind of a hand, like you can pause the action at any point in the battle and reassign everybody to do different things. And, but, you know, like I said, it's a point and click style battle system. So you're just letting everybody go and do their thing.
Yeah.
So this is a game for the strategists and for the Tolkienists and, you know, the dice junkies, for sure. And yeah, this is absolutely something I was, looking forward to on the Switch, because this is the kind of thing I like to take with me to go. Cause you know, it's like a good book.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Everdark Tower, developed by Hit Point, published by Kemco, released August 22nd on the Switch for $4.99. One day, the time has stopped across the world. Invited by a girl seeking help in a dream, you'll be headed to Currentown. Solve the mysteries of the clock tower, which marked the first passage of time in history, and retrieve the time. Chris, tell us about Everdark Tower.
All right. Everdark Tower. Well, this is the latest out of the Kemco Hit Point partnership, which is fast becoming my favorite, actually. Don't tell X-Create. I still want their games. But I don't know. Hit Point, they're like more in the Lufia area of things. It's just like they're a little different and like really interesting. And plus they got those big fluffy sprites, and I really like that. So
you just
like
the ponchos.
The ponchos. They're not in this game either.
Really?
No.
What the hell, Hit Point?
Yeah, I know. What the hell? Get on this. But yes, their flagship, you know, their Dragon Quest slime of their franchise is usually the poncho, which is a little, looks like an, almost like a bird emoji in an enemy. I don't know. It's weird. But yeah, this game is the follow-up, and I guess you could say spiritual successor to Arch Lion Saga, which I covered about, I think, a month ago. So this is the next in their line of bite-sized RPGs. Folks who heard my Pillars review and were like, oh, this all sounds uniformly terrible, and yet I still consider myself an RPG fan. Well, this is for you, because this is a game that can be beaten in 2 hours. In fact, the funny thing about this and Arch Lion Saga is that they both have New Game Plus. And so, to refresh myself on the story, I actually started this game up on New Game Plus and beat it within less than an hour.
Oh, God.
Because I skipped a lot of the town sequences and just went straight to the bosses and stuff like that. So, hey, if you want a baby's first speed run,
there you go
for this game. But yeah,
I'll look for you at AGDQ.
Exactly. Don't, though. I'm like the opposite of that. So this game, Everdark Tower, is that what it's called?
Yes.
I actually forgot. Okay, good. I'm like looking at the title
You're
right
so
now.
You're so bad
like,
with names. I love
I
it.
I am. I don't write anything down either for these reviews. That's the problem. I need to actually write reviews, not just go by my memory. So yeah, it follows the story of local good guy, well, not local good guy, actually, good guy from another place called Albus, and he sails into town and finds out that he's been having these dreams where he dreams of a girl in a clock tower who's asking him to make the time start again. So he travels to this land where it's endless night because the clock that kind of determines time for the rest of the world, I suppose, is stopped. And so he has to travel towards it and uncover the mystery of what's happened. So along the way, you know, he stops in the first town, meets a girl called Sarah, who is the stoker of the flame of the lighthouse, which, of course, protects the town. And so he's kind of distracted into doing it, you know, her quest, and then she joins. And then, you know, basically... The game is divided into 5 chapters, exactly like Arch Lion, and the first chapter is just a tutorial, basically, where it sets up the story and you fight one battle. So it's really 4 chapters. And in every chapter, in chapters 2, 3, and 4, rather, you meet a character, they join you, and then you do a quest, and then the next chapter starts, and then you do the last quest and beat the final boss, and you're done. So yeah, like I said, it's extremely short. However, what I like about this game, and it's this kind of echoes what I liked about Arch Lion as well, is that it scales up super quick. So you go from, you know, getting like 10 experience points for the first set of enemies, or maybe like between 10 and 100, up to like the last chapter where you're getting 15,000 and 30,000 points. And, you know, just stacking on the levels. Now, to keep the thing going, of course, battles are super simplified and yet also very interesting. So this game, again, this is like Archlion. Every time you get a new party member, it just combines their stats into your stats. So you just kind of have a party stat overall. And the enemy has the same. So if you run into two enemies, like their combined HP might be like 700 points, and then your combined HP might be like 800 points. And then when you choose to attack, all the characters attack with their weapons, which is all calculated together. But depending on certain criteria, each character has a special move that you can choose and have them do, and that will be your entire character turn. So like your hero ends up with a couple of moves that one... attacks the enemy and has a chance to freeze them for one turn so that you can get a free turn. The lady has a healing move that she actually learns later, so this is, it actually does start off really challenging because you can't heal yourself very quickly in battle. So you actually kind of have to outlast the enemy, and there's actually a tiny bit of grinding in this one. It didn't reduce the amount of time, you know, past 2 hours, or add on to the time past 2 hours, but anyways. And ultimately, once you get into, like, you know, you kind of start off slow doing, like, you know, some basic moves, or just fighting, you know, attacking your way through every fight, you know, just button mashing. But by the end, by chapters 4 and 5, especially 5, you actually have to get to know your characters and what their moves can do and how it changes the battles, and, like, each one has like a cooldown period or certain criteria that has to be met. Like the final character that you get, he has a really great move that weakens the enemy, and thus they take more damage for 3 more turns. But in order to trigger it, you first have to defend as your turn. So it's one of those kind of, you know, it pays off in the end, but it takes an extra move to pull off. And, you know, the game's actually got a few of those. So it ends up being like, really simplified, but kind of spicy in terms of the battle system. And in fact, the final boss is really a brick wall. So, you know, even after gaining, like, you go from level 1 to level 75 in 2 hours, and yet, you know, this final boss will still challenge you, which I really appreciate. And actually, versus Archlion Saga, I think this game is actually a little higher on difficulty and a little more clever in the way, it kind of presents itself. It's got a little more spit and polish, if you will, to the mechanics. The graphics are exactly the same, and in fact, some of the soundtrack is even cut and paste from the previous game. Huh. Which, you know, that's fine. Final Fantasy basically did that for a while.
Yeah.
So, but actually, I happened to... So, I was in a town... listening to the town music, and I was like, that sounds like the town music to Archlion. So I went to YouTube and pulled up the town music for Archlion, and then, you know, turned on the game and just had them both playing so I could, like, listen to one and listen to the other and see, you know, how they did. And it just so happened that when I clicked the YouTube video, it started in the exact place I was listening to. So they both were going at the exact same time, and it was the exact same song.
Oh, boy.
I even took a video of it because it was so, like, perfectly timed. So, yeah. This, like I said, the storyline to this one is more interesting. I mentioned that Archlion Saga has kind of a downer of an ending. Well, this one's a little better on that. I think the story is a little more satisfying. I actually really enjoyed it even the second time playing through. So, you know, this is definitely one of those kinds where if you're like, you just want to get the whole RPG experience in a single afternoon, this is basically your thing. And, like I said, they stack up to, you know, like Super Nintendo games in terms of like the presentation and the, you know, what all you have to learn. And I will say that, like the last game, I really love the sprite work in this game. It, like, the final boss is just magnificent. And, you know, a lot of the other bosses look really good, too. The backgrounds look really good. Again, there's not a whole lot of variety because there's only 4 places that you go. Like, actually, there's only 2 towns in this whole game. But apart from that, like I said, it's I liked Arch Alliance Saga. I was really interested in seeing where they went next with it, and I really liked this one, and now I want even more, so.
Nice. Well, overall, $5 on this one. What do you say?
$5, I say you can't go wrong. Just don't expect, like, something super long out of this one. You know, but, you know, like, one of my favorite Switch games, if not my favorite Switch game, is The Longest 5 Minutes, which people say can be beaten in about 10 hours. I think that game is sheer magnificence, but, you know, I'm not turned off by the low, the slight amount of content, you know?
Yeah.
So I think a game is a game. And if you feel the same, then this is your game.
Awesome. I might have to pick this one. I love the bite-sized RPGs.
Yeah, I'm really getting into them. I actually really quite like that I finished a game twice before my review. That's kind of a first.
Yeah, it's always good.
Yeah.
But one last game for you to talk about is called Mr. Blaster, developed by Enterai and Forever Entertainment, published by Forever Entertainment, released August 22nd on the Switch for $1.99. This fast-paced casual game is set in the colorful cosmic environment with incredibly fun ragdoll physics and easy, well-known mechanics with a twist. Join a space adventure and take aim at your enemy, shoot with precision and dodge their attacks, with random encounters like flying satellites or asteroids making things more interesting. Chris, tell us about Mr. Blaster.
Okay, Mr. Blaster. Well, I definitely blasted through this one. Okay, so this is a... Yeah, so this is, as they say, a very simple casual game. It very much is... You know, there's not even options. It's just like, you want to play versus a computer, you want to play versus a second person. That's all you get. The one persistent thing that keeps you coming back to this one is that you can gather coins from victories and various things that you can do in the game to unlock more characters. And let's say, for instance, you get a headshot in the game, you get 100 coins. Well, the first character you can unlock at 500 coins, and the last character you unlock, like, it seems like it's about 25 characters, is like 8,000 points. So this at least is a game that if you're a collector type person, this will keep you coming back. So the actual gameplay is that your character stands on a little half dome, like upside down dome, basically planet, and you know, it's just a little platform, basically, going up and down, and the enemy is on the same. That is to say, another platform that's going up and down. The two kind of seesaw each other, and as you cross by, you actually have to aim and fire your projectile at the other guy and hope to hit them. Both characters have a life bar, and once the life bar is depleted all the way, then one character wins. So basically, the way that you throw the projectile is where it actually does kind of get interesting. You basically have to use the stick while holding down the fire button to aim both your height, and which is your overall trajectory, and also the amount of strength or force that you want to throw the thing at. So if you just, you know, if you lob it at them or throw it at them at full strength, it does damage either way. It's just that, will it get to them? Because obviously there's a lot of room to miss if you have, you know, total control over your trajectory. And as I unlock different characters, I noticed they do have different weapons and things like that, but ultimately it just came down to you throw something at the other guy and see if you can hit him. Another interesting thing about this one is that, while you're fighting, so let's say you do hit the character in the head, it basically, it does battle damage to the other guy in that it melts off all of their, like, I guess, whatever costume they're wearing and skin. So they become just this bloody skull, but they're still fighting. But it's all done so cartoonishly that it doesn't seem like visceral or anything like that. I just kind of wonder at that style choice. But I'm like, whatever. They're having fun with it.
Yeah.
You know, if you've had, like, your leg ripped off to where it's, like, the exposed bone and muscle and stuff like that, you're fine. you can still win.
Walk it off.
Yeah, walk it off. Yeah, so the variety of characters seems like it's really nice. You know, it's a quirky cavalcade. You start off with a generic spaceman who's in a, like, astronaut suit and stuff. And, you know, there's a army guy with a grenade, and it look, there's all the other unlockable characters, of course, are in silhouette. And it seems like maybe they're in the roster too, but like the enemies, seem to rotate between about, I guess, five different ones. I don't know. Maybe there's more, and I was just, I kept getting the same five characters, but I don't know. Either way, like I said, it's, as soon as you win or lose a round, it just takes you back to the title screen. So, apart from the coins that you collect from your performance in battle, there's not much else to it. And like you said in the description, floating around the planet that you're on are a bunch of debris, and if your projectile hits them, then it makes them disappear. So they're both an obstacle and, you know, for yourself and for the enemy. So it, you know, they can be both an obstacle and a shield. And there's like an average of about three or four of them per planet. And you know, that puts a little spice in it, I guess. Yeah. But ultimately, yeah, this is very much just a just aim the thing at the guy and see if you can kill him ad nauseum.
Which isn't a bad thing if it's fun, right?
Oh, no. No, yeah. It was fun enough for sure.
Awesome. So $2, what do you think?
Yeah, $2. If this sounds like your thing, then go ahead and get it. It's $2.
Yeah, seriously.
I mean, you can't get something at, yeah, you can't get something at Starbucks for $2.
See, this is why we have the fuck it, why not rating. It's cheap enough that fuck it, just buy it.
Yeah, Mr. Blaster is, you know, it's good enough. Yeah, it's a fuck it, just buy it.
Yeah. All right, well, Chris, thank you as always for coming on, doing your thing. I would normally ask you for final words to end the episode, but now I'm just going to ask you for final words until our next person comes on.
Oh, final words until our next person comes on. Let's see. I just wanted to read you some of the spells that chanters get, because instead of, because they're like lore characters, instead of them being spells, they're like chanting like different things, lore things. So like there's a spell called "The Fox from the Farmer Did Run and Leap." Sure-handed Ela knocked her arrows with speed. Rime and Frost followed the footfalls of Karth, and one dozen stood against the power of the saint. So there you go.
All right, next up, Tim Akibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. Some might say I'm feeling radical today.
Waka, waka, waka. So, how are you doing?
I'm well. We're recording this on Friday night, which means the work week is over, and it's time for a weekend. And a weekend where I don't got shit going on, so I'm pretty excited.
Got some gaming plans for the weekend?
I got Dragon Quest Builders 2 for my birthday, and I will probably be playing a lot of that with my child by my side as he enjoys Dragon Quest quite a bit.
Sweet.
So that's what I'm thinking, probably quite a bit of that. Maybe play some Fire Emblem, which is also very good, but not as entertaining to the child.
No, I wouldn't imagine.
No.
So you ready to talk about a game?
I'm ready to talk about a game. Sure. Do we got a game to talk about?
Yes, as you alluded to earlier, we are going to discuss the game Rad, developed by Double Fine Productions, published by Bandai Namco. It's releasing August 20th on Xbox One, Switch, PC, and PS4 for $19.99. The fate of the world depends on you, your trusty bat, and whatever strange new abilities you gain as the world around you ravages your body, twisting and mutating you into something far less than human, but far more powerful. But forget all that. Go grab that sweet bat and help save the world, or what's remaining of it anyway. Tim, tell us about Rad.
Rad! Hey, it's a Double Fine game.
Yes, that's it cool. Is.
Yeah, it's like, it's nice. It's I enjoy Double Fine. It feels like it's been a while since. No, I played like Headlander, so I played their recent-ish stuff in Broken Age.
I think this is from the same guy who did Headlander. The same, creative guy.
Yeah. All right, so, yeah, the deal with this game is, imagine if, you know how Fallout is a game in which the nuclear apocalypse happened in the 50s. So just imagine like nuclear apocalypse happened in like the 80s. And that's basically the post-apocalypse that you're looking at for this game.
I'm sold.
The game is Rad, which has multiple entendre. But, you know, the currency you pick up is cassette tapes and CDs like in later levels, oddly enough. And you open chests using floppy disks.
Do kids these days even know what the hell those are?
They don't, but we show them. We still have some at work We have a total tangent here, like a case of old Apple II floppies from the 80s.
Holy
with like
shit.
Oregon Trail on them and like various where in the world, where in the whatever is Carmen Sandiego. So
that's
yeah,
awesome.
we got them around. Yeah, nothing to play them on, but we got a bunch of floppies hanging around. Anyways, yeah, but the aesthetic of like the world is very like neon. The aesthetic of the characters, you know, it's like mohawks and it, just very 80s style of everything. Excuse me. So yeah, you are sent forth from your camp to find like a new power source or some shit. A plot point of vague importance, but yeah, so you grab your aforementioned bat, you leave the camp, and you make your way through a series of procedurally generated levels, trying to get further and further and further until you inevitably die, and then you start over. So it is one of those types of roguish, likeish, run-based dilly games. Kind of the big hook of the game is the aforementioned mutations. Like, as you go out there in the wasteland and you kill mutants, of which there is a very good variety in this game. There's lots of different types of enemies with, like, different attacks, and, you know, they're very distinct from one another. Like, graphically, this game looks, I think, really nice. I just think, like, the character design and the look of the world and just, like, all the art looks really good and cool and in with the aesthetic. And lush. And for, you know, a barren wasteland, it's very lush and neon. And well, there was also, like, a second apocalypse, too. I don't know, but...
A second apocalypse?
Yeah, this is, like, two apocalypse removed from civilization. So you go into the world, you bash these mutants with your bat, and as you kill mutants, you will... Like, you'll basically, like, you'll accrue experience, it's rads, as it were, and when you hit a certain threshold, you will undergo a mutation and get an exo mutation. There's exo and endo mutations in the game. Endo mutations are passive. Usually you can get them from items or from machines you find in the world. And that's just stuff like, oh, you can walk on fire, or you might absorb a bit of health, you're immune to electricity, you get, like, an extra heart, stuff like that. That doesn't show on the outside. The exo mutations, those are the things where not only do you get a new ability, but something will change about your appearance to go along with it. And that's the, generally speaking, the cool stuff. So it's like, oh, okay, you get a tail, which you can use to poop out a little spider version of yourself that will run around and attack enemies. You'll get, like, wings. More on those in a bit. You will get, my favorite is you get a snake head, like this giant cobra head, which gives you a very, very good melee attack, which just like it has good range, like has knockback, poisons enemies. It's great. So stuff like that, you know, stuff that shoots like fireballs, stuff there's one where you pull your head off and throw it at enemies. So yeah, like some cool, good, fun stuff. And then, you know, as you level up again, you get more exo mutations, so you have like mutations piled on mutations, and that's where kind of the combat starts to get interesting, as you have multiple mutations and you can kind of experiment with how those mutations will combo with like maybe whatever endo mutations you have, and help you get through the levels. It pains me to say that there are problems with this whole situation.
No, no.
Problem one is that, like, and they kind of feed into each other. The first problem is that your basic bat attack kind of sucks. I feel like it's like the range on it is a little too short. Like, you got to get up on an enemy, like get in a strike, and then you do have a dodge roll to get away. But you got to get it, like get in there pretty close to get a hit on them, and your bat swings are not very fast, so it's tough to like get in there, like do damage and get out. It turns into a real like stick once and move situation. And that works okay for like enemies in the first level, but even like the boss enemies of the first level can be really tough to deal with if you have to rely on your bat and your bat alone for your offensive capabilities. I feel like personally the bat, there needs to be a bit more range on it. I've heard others say that like maybe it would be a bit faster. I think possibly either of those things would help solve the problem, but it stinks. And the problem that is compounded by the fact that like, so that first mutation you get is so important because your bat, like basic melee situation is so not great. Like if your first mutation isn't like a good, strong offensive mutation, like you are pretty, you are possibly pretty fucked from the word go, really. Yeah, it really basically dictates like how well this run is going to go. Like for instance, these fucking wings, yeah, the wings do a thing where it's like, oh, okay, you shoot up in the air and then you can glide down. So you can make it over gaps. You can kind of escape from situations. You can get away from enemies. They don't help you kill shit. They don't help you kill a goddamn thing. So they're a good, like, second or third mutation. Was your first thing, like, it got to the point where if that was the first mutation I got, I literally just quit out of the run and started over. Damn. Because it's just that bad. If you get something like the snake head or something ranged, like there's one called the firearm, your arm's on fire, you shoot fireballs, like that's okay. The one, like anything with like range with a like good offensive capability, like those are going to be good runs probably. And then there's like a bunch of stuff. Well, there's some stuff in the middle, like there's one where you like shoot out thorns and like, okay, well you can make that do because you can kind of just run past enemies. You don't have to stop to hit them. You can just run by, activate the spikes, they get stabbed and you just keep running.
that works.
Yeah, that it does work if you're careful. But like the second problem to the mutations, and this one just really baffles me, is the game is really stuck on giving you the same ones over and over and over again. Which I thought was, at first I thought was just kind of like weird bad luck. Like, oh man, this is weird. I'm kind of getting these same, or I got this one on my first run and now I got it again like two runs later. When you consider that, you know, it just feels like there should be more, right? And then it's like, you know, it just got to this point where it's like, okay, I keep getting these goddamn fucking wings. Like I keep getting this one called Home Slice, where this dude grows on your back and will shoot behind you and you can drop him as a turret. Like I keep getting that one. Like I keep getting the snail trail one. I keep getting the same ones over and over again. I'm like, this is like weird. And I was astonished when I was like, there's gotta be a place that like surfaces. Like I knew there was like a compendium for like your mutations you've collected and this, that, and the other thing. But like when I looked at that and compared it against like how many hours I had put in, how many runs I had did, how I had done, when out of like 60 mutations, I had only seen 10 of them.
Damn.
Out of doing like, and this is, you know, mutating, you know, on better, on every run I was getting like at least one mutation. On by a certain point, I was, you know, I was getting at least like two or three per run, and I was just like, are you like, why? Like there is so much more this game should be showing me at this point when I've played it for this many hours and done this many runs. Like why am I still in a situation where it's like I mutate and here are these goddamn fucking bat wings again? I got the bat wings so many goddamn times and I am frustrated and bitter over it. There was one I ran up into a machine. I didn't know what it did. It turns out what the machine did was it would exchange one of your exo mutations for another one. So I got rid of one that was useful for the fucking bat wings. Just like, why can I not get like, and this is what frustrates me, because this game should be great. This should be a slam dunk recommendation, but like the way that like the melee is just lacking and completely inadequate for dealing with enemies past the first stage. The game like ramps in difficulty pretty hard with just stronger enemies that do more damage, that are faster, more vicious. Once you get onto the second world, it's just like, holy crap. If you're not like well equipped to face the enemies there and the environmental hazards that pop up, like you're just toast. You're just toast. So it's like, it's really important. like if you don't find like get good stuff, like you're screwed. And the game just is so set on just feet. I don't know whether it's saying, so, okay, there is a thing where at the end of each run, like a meter goes up and more like items and stuff is unlocked for each run. So I don't know whether it's a thing where do you need to play like an absurd amount to unlock all of these mutations to be possible for you to mutate into? Or is the game just like, is there just a thing that holds them back to try to, I don't know, like artificially lengthen like the amount of time you're playing the game or something like that? Because in my opinion, like, they should just be letting you have that stuff. Like, you, like, I shouldn't be like through 20 runs and only having seen, you know, 10 of your 60 mutations, and one of which was an upgraded version of the aforementioned fucking wing. So there is upgraded versions of some of them too. It's like when I got it, it's like in Twilight Princess when you got a second hook claw shot that drove me, I was not happy. So yeah, it ends up being frustrating because it's like I had some runs where it's like, okay, where I got, you know, a good mutation right off the bat, which helped me, you know, get through those first couple levels and get a good loadout going. It's like, okay, this is cool. I got like three, you know, different abilities I'm flipping between. I got a bunch of endo mutations. I've picked up a bunch of money. So, you know, I can check out these items and do this and this and this. And it's just, but then more of the time, my runs were either like me desperately trying to make something, you know, that was okay work, or they were just bad. Because I was just desperately, like, it was having to do this tedious, like, hitting and running just to try to move forward until I got to the point where I was like, yeah, I was just, if I got a bad one on my first draw, I would just restart because it just wasn't worth the time.
Yeah.
And it just makes, like, restarting a run, like, really kind of suck because you don't start out with an ability. You have to go into that first level. You have to beat a certain number of enemies before you get that mutation. And then I'm like, is this something I can work with? Okay, let's go. You know, so it's frustrating. This game should be better than it is in its current state, because like everything is there, like, I think, to make it a really cool, fun little roguelike game. Like I said, it looks good. Like, the abilities are all the abilities are cool, like, kind of unto themselves. Situationally, that can vary whether how cool they are. But, you know, the way your character changes their look to reflect what abilities you have, just all the different endo mutations are out there. You know, there is like little bits of lore around the world to pick up. Like, everything seems like all the pieces are there. Just like the way that they are dealt to you holds the game back.
Yeah. So basically the two big things it could do to improve is do a better job randomizing mutations so that you actually see all of them.
That would be enormous. Yes.
And improve the bat.
Yeah. Improve the bat. Yep.
Either by making it swing faster or giving it more range. Hell, maybe both.
Yeah. Something just giving you more to work with just like your basic level powers. You do unlock some different bats, but none of them like drastically change. Like, they have different like passive effects that like change how much damage you take from a fall or other things. They don't change like the actual combat.
Overall,
that is why I have to, in its current state, give this game a try it with an emphasis on the eye, like keep an eye on it. Like, if they patch it and they're like, okay, we're going to cut loose with the mutations and any modifications to the melee stuff, like, then this is probably going to be a game to jump on, like, with just like a couple little tweaks to the formula.
No, that's one of the joys of playing stuff pre-release, is that, you know,
maybe day one patch they'll change it.
Possibly. If there's a substantial patch, we'll definitely take another look at it.
Yeah.
Though.
Yep. Yeah. It's cool when the game works. It's good, but too much of the time it just doesn't work.
No, I'm still gonna check it out. I've been looking forward to this one for a while. So
yeah.
All right, well, Tim, always a pleasure having you on here chatting. Do you have any final words?
No, I blew my rad pun sort of joke on the opening, so I left myself with nothing, poor and empty here at the closing moments of my segment.
All right, moving on. Jacob Garner's here. Jacob, how are you doing?
Oh my God, Joe, nobody cares.
All right, next game to talk about is called Gift the Parthax, developed and published by Poltergeist Studio.
I'm doing fine, thank you very much. I'm okay.
Ah, your joke backfired.
Yeah, it really did. I was really going for like the whole like, ah, Joe, nobody cares what you have to say, and then it was just like, oh, now I just sound depressed. Damn it. And like our two listeners are gonna be like, oh man, I hope Jacob can finish off this review before he dies.
Will he? Tune in to find out.
Ooh, that's the new catch for this show. Our new gimmick.
Yeah, now we'll just wait a week and bring you back for the actual review.
Ooh.
Now although we actually have to get it done.
Yeah, I feel like the guy who gave us this, you know, gift of Parthax, you know, probably wants to like hear us talk about the game.
I would assume so. Should we get to that then?
Yeah, I guess we can. I mean, how many more minutes till like the next guy's up?
All right, next game to talk about is called Gift of Parthax, developed and published by Foldergeist Studios, released August 21st on Xbox One for $4.99. Gift of Parthax is a 2D top-down action arena game of gladiatorial wizardry. Customize your arsenal of countless spells, duel the masters of the arena with their mythological beasts, and rescue your friend Velius from a powerful mage, Parthax. Jacob, tell us about Gift of Parthax.
Well, I'll be honest with you. At first, this was going to be a pretty negative review. At first. Because, you know, I fire up the game and it's like, oh, do you want to do the tutorial level? And I'm like, yes, please, because I have no idea what I'm doing. And the tutorial level is like, okay, use a couple of buttons and that's it. Bye. And it's like, wait, what? Because, like, I still had no idea. And the game, like, it really doesn't explain how anything works. And so I get into my very first arena, and I'm like, wait a second, so you're telling me I can only shoot fireballs from my right side of my body, not my left? Like, this seems like an oddly broken game. And so... I don't know
where you came to that conclusion that you could only shoot to the right.
Because the game doesn't explain that you have to use... All right, hold on. I was going somewhere with this, okay? So anyways, so I'm playing the game grumbling about, like, you know, oh my god, I can't believe, like, this... Like, anybody thought that this was a good idea. Although I did find it hilarious that it's, like, if I had my guy facing... the left, it looked like I was shooting fireballs out of my butt. But anyway, so there I am running around the arena, only shooting fireballs from my right side, playing the game on an insanely hard mode, unnecessarily, before I realize, I should see what the right stick does. And lo and behold, the right stick is to aim your, like, projectiles, your spells, all that kind of stuff. And I'm just like, oh, this game got a lot easier all of a sudden.
I wish I was streaming this so that people could see me here with my hand in my head shaking at you.
Yeah, I kind of wish for that too.
My god.
So like, I actually beat, like, the very the first two arenas on a stupidly hard mode because I didn't understand how the game works. Because the game,
oh my god,
also doesn't explain how it works. So...
It took you that long to figure out to use the right stick.
Yeah, I went through arenas spring 1 and 2 before I figured out, oh, hey, maybe I should use the right stick and see what happens. Jeez. I will say this, to my credit, I did not die. Like, if you go look at my achievements, I have not earned the one gamer score point, you know, you have died achievement.
Yeah, that's something that I'm sure is going to turn a lot of people off. We have to address that elephant in the room. This game has a couple of odd numbered achievements. It has 3 3-pointers and a 1-pointer. They all look very, very easy to obtain.
They are.
So,
like,
Don't let that turn you off from the game.
I was going to say, there's a lot of easy achievements, and to be honest, once you figure out how the game's mechanics work, it's actually a really, it's a deceptively fun game. I mean, it's just like the graphics are nothing to get excited about. It's, you know, it looks like an old school, you know, mid 90s RPG.
Retro style. A lot of people do that.
Yeah. And you know, it's an arena thing. And so you're just running around the arena, with your left stick, and then you use your right stick to aim. So, anyway,
like a whole new world when you tried that, wasn't it?
It really was. I was just like, oh my God, there's an arrow pointing on the screen. Does this mean that like, this is where the spell goes? And I'm like, oh man, you gotta be kidding me.
This is now my favorite review of the episode.
So,
really like most of the time, I don't care if I send a link and I never hear back. I really hope the developer listens to this. Like, I really hope he listens and he's like, oh my God, how stupid is this guy?
Hey, I played the tutorial level. I expect to be told how the game plays. Okay. To my credit, it didn't say anything about that.
I had no problems learning from the tutorial.
You know what? Shut up.
User error.
You know what? All right. There isn't even a thing in the game that's like, you know, oh, here's what all the buttons do. Like, there's nothing in settings. The settings are like, do you feel like listening to music? Do we need to adjust brightness? Like, that's it.
I do agree with you that the game could use some more instruction in what things are. Like, I've been playing for a while. I don't know what this knowledge is that I keep getting.
Yeah, it doesn't make it clear. I think it actually just makes your magic points. I think it just makes them go up, I think. But I'm not entirely sure. And then also, it's just like, it took me a long time to figure out like the spell book, because again, like it doesn't really explain yourself like itself. And so here I am buying runes, but I didn't get that. Like you couldn't like, even though it was a projectile rune or something like that, you couldn't always attach it to every single spell.
Yeah.
And I wish like it would explain that more, because I remember getting the rune that's like, oh, it'll, you know, if you attach this, it'll go after the first enemy. And then it's just like, it didn't seem like it actually did. I don't know. Honestly, once I actually figured out how the game mostly works, I was having a blast with it. I don't say it's one of my favorite games I've had to review, but it like honestly, I was having plenty of fun with it.
Like, what else do you do in the game? So you go through arena battles. What else?
There's really not much else to it. I mean, like, there's like a plot to it. I mean, you're trying to save your friend who's been put under this terrible spell, and he's sick in bed, and like a guy keeps telling you, "Oh, he's getting worse," which. I don't know how much more times you can tell me that he's getting worse before the guy is like officially dead. But you know, it's just like, there's a plot along with it. And it's just like, you know, oh, this new challenger, I'll make sure he doesn't make it out of the ring. You do, but
shocking.
You know, yeah.
It's enough plot to keep you going at least.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. If you're here for plot, I think you're going to be a little disappointed. But it's a generic fantasy plot, and it's just, I don't know. My only real gripe with it, aside from it not really explaining itself, is that the music was on this kind of loop, and it almost seemed like when the song had finished and was about to start again. Did you notice, like, there was, like, almost, like, a skip in the animation?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Playing on an X, so that I don't know if that might be the issue or not. I actually did run into an issue. I debated whether or not I wanted to bring this up on the show, because I brought it up to the developer, and he said that there is a patch in the works that is hopefully going to address it. but on one of my consoles, I ran into an issue where the game would overheat.
I'm sorry, what?
The game would cause my console to overheat, and it would shut off. I would get maybe a minute or two into the game, and my system would just shut off. It didn't happen on my other console. I don't know if this is an issue with the game or with my console. I would presume it's maybe half and half. I mentioned it to the developer. He said that one other person experienced the issue, and two out of how many reviewing clearly isn't enough of a sample size to determine if there's an issue. But he did go through the code, and I think he said he went through the DLL files and tried to make sure that everything was okay, and there is a patch in the works. It's clearly nothing that affected you.
No, but then again, I mean, was this happening on your Xbox One X?
I have two Xs.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, so it happened on one but not the other?
Yeah, it happened to the one in my office but not the one out in the living room.
Your office makes it sound so official.
I know it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, up until somebody sees what you actually look like, and then they're like, oh, he's a schlub with a living room.
Yeah, I am.
But yeah, no, that's fascinating, because, I mean, I have an Xbox One S, and yeah, it didn't, like, definitely no overheating on my end. I mean, it was just like that weird, as I said, that music loop, which, I mean, it didn't break any gameplay. It was just something I picked up on. But yeah, no, I didn't even realize it was only $5.
Yeah, like, it is.
Yeah. Holy crap. Yeah. Well, then, I definitely recommend it day one, which I believe it goes on sale in like 2.5 hours.
Yeah. So it'll be out by the time people hear this.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, so your overall verdict then for $5?
Heck yeah. Definitely. I was impressed once I figured out how to play the game.
Yeah, I enjoyed it when I finally was able to play it on my other console. I just, again, I debated whether or not I wanted to mention this on the show because he said that a patch is in the works that's hopefully going to address this. But I felt, you know, I had to be mentioned at least a little bit in passing so that if people run into the issue, know that there is a patch in the works that's hopefully addressing the issue. And hopefully it's not going to be that widespread of a problem to begin with. It's probably just some weird configuration issue that I don't know how games work, but clearly it's not affecting everyone. So
yeah, I was going to say, and it appears that it's only on Xbox One X's. So,
oh, I don't know what console the other person who had the issue was.
Oh, I thought you, okay. You made it sound like they also had one.
So. Oh no, I have no clue what console they were on.
Gotcha.
But yeah, Jacob, thank you as always for coming on, chatting about this. Do you have any final words?
I'm highly annoyed that Sony is backing out of the Marvel deal. I don't know if you heard about that.
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I'm sure we're going to mention it on the next show because of what I feel is kind of funny timing that they purchase Insomniac and then the next day they cancel their deal with Disney. When Insomniac were the ones who did the Spider-Man game.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's really weird timing in my eyes, but we'll discuss that on the next episode a bit more, I'm sure.
Yep.
Just weird.
And also, we're getting a fourth Matrix movie.
Yeah, I saw that too. As a movie buff, you're probably really excited, huh?
I mean, I dig the Matrix movies. And interestingly enough, I mean, like, there's been rumblings for, like, the last couple of years that Warner Brothers was thinking of even remaking the movies. And I'll tell you what, like, as groundbreaking as it was, there are certain moments in the Matrix movies where it's just, like, it is painfully obvious that, like, that's CGI. Most notably, like, when Morpheus is fighting the agents on top of the tractor trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's just like everything just looks 2D, and it's just, this is bad. So, I mean, like, I would have welcomed a remake, because, I mean, a lot of us forget that the movie is now 20 years old.
Oh, I feel so old now.
And so it's just like, yeah, you know, maybe we're due for another one. But at the same time, I also find it kind of interesting that Lawrence Fishburne isn't signed up for Matrix 4. At least he isn't yet. Which, if you were paying attention to, like, the Matrix lore and stuff like that...
I wasn't.
Well, in the Matrix Online, the short-lived MMO that was around for, like, 2 years, I think, Morpheus actually died in that storyline. And then, if I remember correctly, Neo and Trinity both came back to life. And so it's just like, oh, well, they're actually keeping with the story. Interesting. So.
I like how I always ask you for final words and we get in a conversation.
Well, usually I don't even think of anything to say, but this time I did.
All right, and moving on, we got Royal Sefton joining us. Royal, how are you doing?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Good. Middle of another marathon episode, so we'll see.
I'm honored to be part of it.
Oh, and Purnell's coming next, so that's going to be even longer. Oh, shit.
Nice.
It's fun when you plan things out in advance and you have like a spreadsheet on your computer of who's doing what and when in the show. Mm-hmm. And it helps me. It lets me have some continuity because I'm mentioning things that didn't happen yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun.
Here's to future nostalgia.
So how's things going for you?
Oh, pretty well. I've been checking out Animus for the Xbox One.
You ready to dive into this?
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, Animus Standalone, developed and published by Ten Birds. It released August 7th on Xbox for $9.99. Animus is an action RPG that calls upon you to bring an end to a dying world. Button mashing will get you killed. Keep a keen eye on your stamina as you block, dodge, and strike down your enemies. How is it?
Yeah. Dying world, I thought it was already dead because it's so desolate looking, but that's not like a slam against the game necessarily. It's just that you end up in this world that looks very, very dry. It kind of looks like my backyard a few years ago, like rural Arizona. And so
you and your Arizona jokes.
Yeah. Well,
that's a niche demographic right there.
Well, I got palm trees now, so it's not all bad. Kind of looks like inland California here. Nice. But yeah, I love it. So yeah, Animus, it's kind of like a bite-sized Dark Souls. That's the best way to describe it, I think. So you play like a walking suit of armor in what looks like a desert. And you rock from enemy to enemy, and you have to be patient. Like you even said in the byline, you know, button mashing will get you killed. Truer words never been said. It is definitely a game that is, I wouldn't say like ridiculously challenging, but it does reward patience. Mm. Yeah, so you'll encounter sometimes 2, 3, 4 mobs at a time, and they're all going to have a sort of... you know, wind up in the pitch sort of attack style, some faster than others. You know, you block, you dodge, you respond, or if you know their patterns, maybe you have a way of jumping right in. And certain combos that you can pull off where you kind of have like left hand, right hand, or, you know, sword and shield, they're different pieces of equipment you can pick up as you play. You know, you can do a combination of either of those things, and those combos, of course, link the attacks, and so you can hit them 2 or 3 times in sequence. And if you have the right kind of combination or the right amount of power, or the enemy is just weak enough, you can stagger them, which means you can just continue to, you know, mow them down or do a little crowd control. So yeah, kind of the Dark Souls-ish gameplay. I've played a little bit of Dark Souls 3. I'm not deeply familiar with the game, enough to really kind of get the gist of what that was about. And so I can see, you know, the comparison, to Animus being kind of apt. I call it bite-sized because it's instead of like having this big open world or, you know, even just a big linear world, it's kind of broken into chunks instead. Mm-hmm. And each one has a par time. So you like load up the section, and if you beat it within 5 minutes, it improves your rating. If you don't use healing potions, it improves your rating. So you get like 1 to 3 stars.
That's an interesting spin to take on Dark Souls formula.
Yeah. So, I mean, I get the feeling, based both on a little bit of Google Foo and that sort of build, that it's really a mobile game that's been adapted to the console, to PC, all that stuff. I was playing it on the Xbox. And, you know, sort of that you can pick it up, play it for a few minutes, come back to it later if you want, and not have that constant continuity where you are going from one place to the next and you just get between campfires to save. This is more like you're dropped in, you do have a timer going. You exceed, say, the 5-minute mark, you might not get the full 3 stars. That means some of your drops that you would get for that level or the additional rewards are not given to you, but you can go back and reattempt them. Kind of like, you know, any mobile game where you can have hundreds of levels and you can redo them for a better rating later.
Yeah.
Same rule applies. And so you'll have this path of light that you follow. It tells you where to go, but not terribly confusing because it's a very linear game. Work through the enemies. Once you kill enough of them, this magic barrier that holds up the next section will disappear. You come to a statue, you pray to it, and that's a checkpoint. It'll replenish your health. You have 3 potions, make good use of them. You have a limited number of revives. Don't have to use them. You can go back to the checkpoint or just try again. But if you're like really close to the boss, maybe you'll want to use your revive once in a while if it was really difficult to get there. And it's kind of an interesting formula on a game that, you know, or a game style, I guess, that's really known for being very demanding, very challenging. I kind of like the idea of being able to just drop in and do it in kind of, you know, pieces like that.
Yeah, and, do a run or two and move on.
Yeah, and as you play, you can't do it in each level, but when you complete a level or you otherwise abort from one, you can upgrade your weapons and armor, or as you complete certain levels, you might get new weapons and armor drops, but you more commonly get shards, so you can build up the different weapons that you get. You can break them apart, or you can sell them for resources, either one. Sell them for gold, you know, break them apart for resources, what I mean to say. And, As the gear kind of goes up, so does the power of your character, but you can also level up over time by spending points. Every time you level up, you get a couple points, and you get allocated to things like your poise, which I'm assuming is kind of like your attack style. I didn't really know how it was defined in the game. It wasn't really clear to me, but I gather it was sort of like your attack and combo capabilities, how quickly you can dodge, how much stamina or HP you have, run out of stamina, you stagger, you kind of, you know, get dizzy. Pretty simple and some amount of customization, but nothing cosmetic per se. Like, you can't really change the look of your character. You can't pick from different types of characters. It's very simple in that regard, but you can take it in a direction that suits your play style.
That works.
Yeah. And as you go in and you do your boss fights, especially, you know, you lock on target, you dodge, you block, you attack. It's all very simple, and it's just, you know, patience will, a patient player will be rewarded. You know, you just, if you learn to time the pattern of the boss or learn how to dodge those specific attacks they throw at them or throw at you, then, you know, you can come out ahead. But if you just rush right in, you're just gonna get murdered. And in that sense, you're
shit wrecked.
Yeah, get wrecked, exactly. Just that, in that sense, it reminds me of the bit of Dark Souls 3 that I have played. Absolutely.
So like getting wrecked.
Yep. But you know, and it's, in general, it's a pretty good game. There are some things that definitely make me think it is a mobile port, and maybe some more polish would have been nice for the Xbox version of it, because like in between each level, you get these little tiny windows that take up maybe 50% of your screen, a whole bunch of just unused screen real estate, and you scroll through a little bit of text and you scroll across to see what your rewards are. It's just like, you know, you could have blown it
bigger,
up.
Yeah.
Use the whole television screen for this, you know.
Like I have a 65-inch TV for a reason.
Right, and here I am getting the binoculars out so I can play my game. You know, the game itself thankfully uses the whole screen. It's just like between levels, you can't really tell what the hell's going on unless you look carefully and scroll through it all. And also the graphics just to me feel kind of prior generation, and that's not a huge criticism, especially at this price point, but it's something of which to be aware. Like, it doesn't really look like an Xbox One game. It looks like an Xbox 360 game to me.
Which isn't a huge deal breaker for me either. It's more about the substance of the game than the style in my eyes.
Yeah, and, you know, the gameplay might be a little grindy for some tastes. Like, you know, there are some things that I think it could be more varied in, but the core gameplay is pretty good. I feel like the controls took a little time to get used to. Like, the timing of the character feels a little mushy, not quite as connected as I'd like. I mean, you feel like you're basically operating a tank, especially when you're locked in. It's definitely, like, tank mode. And my weapon of choice is a lance, and that makes it even worse because he's just, like, dragging this massive freaking lance. So, yeah, I feel like I'm just commanding, like a medieval tank, but
well, you pretty much are.
yeah, but it's still, you know, it's a lot of fun.
Cool. It sounds like this is something for people who enjoy the Dark Souls formula but aren't a fan of all that exploring bullshit.
That's about the size of it, because you know, basically, you know, as much exploring as you'll do is you might go check the corners of the different areas instead of going straight for the light path, you know, and you find the treasure chests looks like these boxes that are kind of like tied to these corpses, and you walk up to them and the boxes open themselves and find some gear. I don't know what the story is behind that exactly. You don't just find a treasure chest. You find somebody with a treasure chest for a back.
Nice.
I don't know what the hell is going on there, but yeah, that's as close to exploring as it gets. It's very direct. It's very
linear. Nice. Well, overall, $10 on it. What do you think?
I think for $10, that's definitely the right price for it. It's well into the buy it range for me. I mean, if you go into it expecting for $10 to get something that is going to provide feature parity with a game like Dark Souls, I think you might be a little disappointed. But there's a good amount of world building and lore. There's a lot to do within the very narrow confines of what the game is. It's really all about the combat. And I mean, I had a lot of fun with it. I think for $10, that's a great deal.
Awesome. So as long as you go into it knowing it's a $10 game and not a $60 game, you're set.
Yeah, seems obvious, but you never know. Somebody's
a lot of people out there are like, Dark Souls is so much better. They have customization and they have exploration.
And campfires.
People will find anything to bitch about. So
yeah, roger that. No, for $10, dude, this game's great.
Yeah. All right. Well, Royal, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final words?
Souls.
All right, and you thought we forgot about him, but he's just here at the end of the show for once. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I needed the breather anyway. I need to be at the end of the show. I gave blood, and I'm sleepy, passed out. Here I am. You know, woo.
Yeah, normally we throw you at the front because you usually have the bigger games of the show, but you're kind of, you got a couple of little ones this week.
Got some itty-bitty gamies. But at the same time, little doesn't necessarily mean anything but.
Exactly.
That makes no sense, but you know what I mean.
They could be good, they could be bad, they could be somewhere in between, they could be like any other game.
Exactly right. And heck, I've hit that point recently where I find myself playing more smaller games than anything. I go to the gym a couple days a week, or one of those kickboxing things, really. I'm not out there bench pressing Buicks or nothing yet. So recently, one of the trainers at my gym learned that I'm into games because I approached his Game Boy Advance SP that was just sitting out for some reason. I don't know why it was there. I think he bought it from like a flea market or something. But started rambling about game stuff. So 2 days ago, or so I see Monday, he goes, "So what games do you play these days?" And I go and tell him. His response, "What the hell are you talking about?"
Oh, no. What games did you tell him?
Well, honestly, normal shit, but smaller games. Like, I'm playing Forager still. And, of course, I had to give him a chuckle about Omega Labyrinth. I had to. you know, just like simple stuff. Labyrinth of Refrain, which, believe it or not, I still go back and forth to. I still play that game. It's so good. But I named those and probably like two other games. And he was completely dumbfounded because every game I named is not in the mainstream list of games everyone's playing. So he's like, "Man, you play a lot of different stuff." I'm like, "Well, yeah, I like different games, but I also like I still play Wolfenstein." Like, I basically hit him with like the game I knew he would recognize. "Oh, yeah, Wolfenstein's cool, man." I'm like, yeah, Wolfenstein, buddy. You know what's up.
Dropping the casual names.
That's right. My goal, I like to be that guy where I get people talking about, you know, I get people on, thinking I'm on the level with them. "Hey, man, this guy likes Mario. You should play with him. T- talk to him about some games, man. He likes Sonic. No, he ain't okay. and then as I get them, you know, comfortable, yeah, he plays Nintendo games. He likes Mortal Kombat. I'm like, yo, you know what you really need to be playing now? You need to be playing that Liar Princess and the Blind Prince. That's the hot shit right there. The what? The who is it? What game? That's right. That's what I'm talking about. Etrian Odyssey, brother. You ever play that? That's the hotness right there. That's the real game.
I don't even know how to spell Odyssey.
Exactly. Get a book. I suggest the Iliad. But it's like, it's just ridiculous. Like, I just like trying to give people that sense of like, okay, now they know I play games that they know are good. Here are all the games they're not playing, but based on my already established pedigree, maybe they'll take me up on it. Yeah, I'm going to look into that game. I wouldn't have thought about it before, but since you suggested it, let me see what you're talking about. Man, for that Rabby Reeby, you weren't lying. I saw a little bunny girl on a fairy on the cover and thought, this is stupid, but I took your advice. This game is awesome. Like, I know. That's right, see? Don't judge a book by its cover. Judge it by my suggestions, because I know my shit.
You do know your shit. That's why you're on this show.
Oh, shuckleberries. Thank you, man.
Yeah, boy. I got to shower you in compliments. That's how I keep you on the show.
Also, games and good conversation. There's a whole plethora of things at work here.
Cole? You said plethora. Where's Cole? That's her favorite word.
You just sniff her in here and go, I'm right here, Joe. It's just great. But yeah,
I should see if she's available. Just bring her into the call right now. Be like, she'll be like, what do you want? Like, Purnell said plethora. Bye. Click.
Yay! Like the Pee Wee Herman, the Pee Wee's Funhouse scream. The word of the day, plethora. Whoa! I missed that stuff. Absurd as that damn show was, I loved it.
Hell yeah, so, man.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Would I watch it today? I don't know. I feel like I had a point in my life where Pee Wee Herman's high-pitched voice is more grating than fun. But nonetheless, I can still address the fact that I love me some Pee Wee's Playhouse when I was a kid. In early teen. And possibly late teen after we learned about his shenanigans. All those things.
He was just an adult like everybody else.
Pretty much. Which honestly, thinking back on that, that really didn't mean make any sense to me. It really didn't. Like, when we were growing up, we were kids and we learned about it. It's like, what happened to Pee Wee Herman? Yeah, you know, he got locked up, right? What did he do? Well, he was touching himself in public. Oh, no, that's terrible. You shouldn't do that. Where was he? He was in an adult theater. Isn't that what you do there? I thought that was the point of going, was to do that. Why would he go to jail for that? As a kid, it didn't click. Because, of course, Alhar was like, you know, diddle himself in public. And then later on, as an adult, I understood, you know, the circumstances and everything. This is stupid. He should not have lost his job. If anything, he should have come out with his high-pitched voice, had like a press conference, like, hey, everybody, Pee Wee Herman here. I have a penis, and I touch it sometimes. That's my life. That's I do what I want. I want to come, I'm going to do it. Ah! And he's like, you know.
The word of the day is ejaculation.
Pretty much. Exactly. I can picture a lot of grown men being like, you know, I can relate to Pee Wee Herman. He's normal. You know what? Put the man's show back on. We can have a second version for the adults that comes on later. Which, the other thing I didn't even realize until later on in life was that there was like the original Pee Wee's Playhouse version was for adults. Mm-hmm. And then they tweaked it for the kids. So that was even more strange. It's like, who sat there in the drawing room in the room and was like, you know, you have a thing here that would work great with the kids. Yeah, but I want to entertain adults. Yeah, but kids bring in more money. You have a weird stick here. Less adults, more kids. All right, make the chair talk.
Merchandising.
That's right. Make that chair talk and get Lawrence Fishburne on the phone. We can bring him in.
Bill Hartman, too. Don't forget about him.
Oh, yeah. Wait, who did he play on? Was he Jambi?
No, Phil Hartman was the sea captain that was always on the phone, the video phone.
Oh, see, now I got to go back and watch. I don't even remember him being on there.
Yeah, but man.
Now you got me thinking. And I also feel bad because I'm supposed to know everything Phil Hartman's ever done in his life because he was awesome. And he was. The fact he really friggin' was. still one of the most tragic stories I heard from like my childhood as far as like entertainers go. But let's not go down that road because we're talking about fun shit.
Yeah, let's talk about some fun shit. Should we talk about some games?
Yes, let's get down to business.
All right, you got three games to talk about tonight. The first one is called Rogue Singularity, developed by Considerable Content, published by released August 15th on the Switch for $14.99. A supermassive black hole is tearing the cosmos apart, and one plucky little robot has to race across the shattered fragments of countless worlds into the heart of the Rogue Singularity itself. Purnell, tell us about Rogue Singularity.
Rogue Singularity, I think, can be best described as a distilled down variant of, or distilled down version of Mario Galaxy, like really distilled down. And what I mean by that is just the floating, like, it's like, Matt, remember how Mario would like fly to different planets in Mario Galaxy and he would land, and most of the time he was on like a normal world, but sometimes he would just have a course of floating platforms that he would have to traverse. Mm-hmm. Well, Rogue Singularity is that last part. You basically fly into onto an island, you stop, and now you have to run a course. And each course is randomly generated using various elements that are meant for that specific world. There are about five or six worlds. I don't know exactly how many because my poor ass did not get to the end because this game is not easy. But there are about five or six worlds in the game, each one consisting of three stages. And each of those stages are, again, are randomly generated based on various elements pertaining to the world that you are on. Now, as you play through the stage, you have a jump and a double jump. But in addition to that, you also have an ability that you can access. Though, weirdly enough, you start with a glide, which is useful as all hell. But then to get other abilities, you have to spend money that you find as you run through the courses to unlock them. But the first one you have to pay money to unlock, at least from what I noticed, is the glide that you start the game with. So I was a little confused by that. But it quickly dissipated when I just said screw it and bought it and then bought the next thing. And now I had a choice between two different abilities. Because unfortunately, you can only have one ability at a time. You can't buy all the abilities and have them all stack up. Which generates a really interesting problem. Which is that the game gives you about six or seven different abilities you can have total. But you'll never want to use anything other than the glide because, like Mario Galaxy, jumping between floating 3D floating platforms in a 3D space requires some finessing because if you just jump and land, you're probably going to die a lot because you're going to misjudge a lot of jumps. And that glide gives you the ability to kind of, you know, ease yourself onto a platform, get it just right, and thereby improving your overall game playing experience. So to be told, hey, get rid of the glide in favor of a one-time use, revert back to the start of the level if you're about to die, why the hell would you do that? The glide is where it's at. There's a couple other things like a grappling hook that pulls you to ledges, but again, it's not getting shoots downward to pull you onto a ledge you're trying to land on. It only shoots straight ahead. So again, I'd rather have the glide than a grappling hook. And as a result, I pretty much never use anything but the glide option. You can also spend money to access one-time use items, which I am really greedy and did not ever purchase, and I'll tell you why in a second. But some of the items you could purchase were things like a jumping pad, because some levels will have pads you can jump on, which will give you like a big springy boost to get to a higher ledge, and they're usually meant to be part of the level. But you can purchase a one-time place jump pad, which you can then just put on the ground and then jump off of it. And there's other stuff like that too. Now, the reason why I did not buy this thing, time to tell you. Well, one, I was grinding to just get all the ability set up. But two, like I said earlier, every level consists of three stages. The levels are not easy. Like, they start out easy, but they get hard fast. And if you're not really good at 3D platformers, it's never easy. So I'm just going to throw that out there right now. But if you start out with five lives total, and on each level, you may be able to stumble across an extra life that you can grab. But sometimes it's also collectible, which, again, I'll get to in a second. But, unfortunately, if you run out of lives, both found and on in your possession by dying too much, the game kicks you all the way back to the beginning of the game. And while there is a way to circumvent this problem, but it ain't cheap. So throughout each stage, on one of the levels anyway, of a world, you might find a secret alcove. And in that alcove will be a robot that offers to provide you a shortcut to that world. That shortcut is not cheap. It's going to cost you a lot of money. So you could buy a bunch of one-time use items, or you can sit down and stock up 3,000 coins so that you can pay for that shortcut. I think I'd rather buy the shortcuts. Thank you very much. So I saved up my money, and that's the whole point of it. But in the meantime, as you're trying to save up money, you're playing through these levels and getting your ass handed to you. Now, visually, this game looks really cool. I like the look of the different planetoids, even though they're all, like I said, floating universes. The game still does a decent job of making them each look very unique, whether one is just kind of like dead metal looking with like metallic platforms and ledges, whereas another one might be like you're like in a wooded world where like there's like stony platforms and like woodcutter robots throwing axes at you and like logs rolling on like weird half pipes. I don't know why that would exist, but whatever. And there's like all kinds of cool stuff that makes each world feel unique unto itself. And the little robot you control, I think, is pretty awesome too. He starts with a default build, but as you play through the game, you can actually stumble across items on the worlds. Like I said earlier, sometimes instead of getting an extra life on a world, you'll be able to find a collectible instead. That collectible will be a part, whether it be a head element, arms, legs, or body, which can be used to customize the look of your little robot. Does nothing but make him look different, but it's kind of fun to say I want this robot to have these like weird gangly arms and giant feet and like a weird pirate hat and whatever. It's just kind of fun to get the collectibles and then build a robot that looks like you. So
or the game close itself, enough to you, I guess.
Exactly. No, he looked exactly like me. I wear a pirate hat all the time and I have little gangly arms and big legs.
That's you do. I've seen you in person.
That's right. You know what I'm talking about. Big legs. But honestly, throughout the time I have spent playing this game, I genuinely enjoyed it. It does make me sad, however, I will admit that, like I said earlier, the abilities, you have to equip one or only one of them. So all the stuff I'm unlocking for those are pretty much useless to me because I'm never going to use them. But as far as just raw platforming goes, once I got used to working with that camera, because again, it is a 3D platformer, which means you'll be finagling that right thumbstick to get the right visual image of your your jumps up. You'll be doing that. It's going to lay out on the table. But once I accepted that and just went through the motions and played the game, I was enjoying myself. I had fun trying to get through each course. And even though they're all randomly generated, I still found myself trying to complete the levels and making the jumps, and my memory sucks, so if there was any repeating, I couldn't fucking tell. I was just moving and grooving to the beat. It was fun. Also, worth mentioning, the music in this game is really good. It's really good. I don't know who wrote the OST for it, but if they're listening, you deserve a medal, buddy. You did a great job on this, and I would gladly listen to your OST.
I wonder if it's available anywhere.
That's a good question. Because if it is, we need to tell the world, tell everybody. Bop to Rogue Singularity. It's the bee's knees.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah, it's like, I'm not even sure what the genre would be considered, because I'm terrible when it comes to genres that aren't shoegaze, noise, pop punk, you know, Lady Tron, Lady Rock, Glam Girl, Glam Glock, you know, all the cool genres of music.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything, not even on the Steam page.
Oh, that sucks. Well, maybe someone will do the honorable service of ripping it and putting it on YouTube at some point.
Maybe, but well, $15 on Rogue Singularity, what do you think of it?
Honestly, I think if you're into 3D platformers and you're itching for another bite, it's a solid buy because it will challenge you, it will be enjoyed, and you'll enjoy the music as you do it. Just don't go on expecting the abilities to matter.
All right, well, next game to talk about is Zeus Begins, developed and published by The Dude Games, released August 15th on Steam for $9.99. Help the young Zeus come back to Olympus and defeat Cronus. Cronus ate all of his sons, but Zeus escaped with the help of his mother. He trained so hard in combat to defeat all the enemies that Cronus sent to him. Fight with the mythologic creatures and titans across Greece in a beat-em-up game. Purnell, tell us about Zeus Begins.
Okay, so Zeus Begins, you play, like you said earlier, you play as Zeus, and you play through approximately 5 worlds. 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, I'm going to go with that. If I'm wrong, may whatever. Anyway, you play through 5 stages, And on each level, you have to go as a solid scrolling from left to right level, and enemies will come from the left and right sides of the screen. You can throw – one button allows you to punch, which allows you to throw punches in front of you. Another button is a kick. It's a slower attack, but it allows you to kick behind you to cover your back end if someone comes up from behind. Now, gameplay-wise, this game is extremely simple. You have those two functions, and every once in a while, you'll see a little gremlin that resembles the little gnome from Golden Axe run around with a sack, and you don't beat him up like in Golden Axe. Instead, in this game, you just watch him, and he'll eventually drop lightning bolts on the ground. And each time you pick one of those lightning bolts up, it will charge a gauge. If you press your power button, depending on where the gauge is, you'll do a different attack. If it's just, actually, I don't think I've ever used it with one, so I'm not even going to tell you what that one does. But I know at level 2, it throws a lightning bolt straight ahead of you. If you use it at level 3, it throws a lightning bolt in both directions. And if you use it at level 4, it does a screen whopping lightning storm. And then once you've done that, it's drained. You have to charge it up again by finding another little gnome man who eventually shows up on the screen. So as you play through the game, you will fight enemies. Most of the enemies kind of perform in much the same manner, and I'll talk about that towards the end of this, because I got to finish the actual general description. But at the end of every level, you will fight a boss who may or may not give you trouble. And once you've beaten him, you'll likely move on to a sky shooting stage, because every set of levels is broken up with a shooting sky shooting stage. And while you're on those levels, you're fighting harpies and flying mermaids or whatever, and you can attack them by pressing the attack button to fire bullets. There's no other attacks while you're on the shooting stages but bullets, that same bullet shot, which is fine. And you're just taking out adversaries, whether they're flying or like boats or whatever. And at the end of those levels, there's also a boss. And after that, you pretty much have like five, like another four times, because you have to do it between levels. So it's four shooting stages. And then at the final boss, you pretty much beat the tar out of him, and the game's over. Now,
Seems simple enough.
Exactly. And unfortunately to me, in this weird instance, that's the problem I have with it. So as a first game, this is a solid game. I mean, it ticks the boxes, the general boxes you'd expect someone to design a game to get. You walk left and right, enemies come onto the screen, you punch them, they die. Every once in a while, a boss will have an energy potion in it, which will heal your health, just like a roast in a tub or a chicken in a skillet. You know, the usual beat-em-up style. But there's nothing else. So, let me go on to that. So, one, usually when back in the day when beat-em-ups start need to, like, you know, liven up aside from just the punching of the guys, they would throw something like weapons in there. You know, you're walking by, oh crap, there's a pipe on the ground. I'm going to pick that up. Now, yeah, I'm doing the same thing, swinging that attack button, but now I have this arching pipe, which makes a cracking sound, and it feels like I'm doing something slightly different. It changes it up a little bit for me. But there are no weapons in this game. The entire game is just the punching and the kick. And to be honest with you, I rarely ever use the kick. Instead, enemies move in fairly simple patterns, so it was easy to kind of corral them all together and just punch them, and they would die in a group. It wasn't very challenging in that regard. Like, it was very easy just to kind of knock through it. No difficulty. Also, I was going to say something about the enemy variety needing to be improved, but I honestly didn't have an issue with the enemy variety. However, going back to the earlier point, even though there were different enemies that would pop up sometimes, they all felt like they behaved exactly the same with very few exceptions. So, like, you'll find a Batwoman, like a succubus, who on one of the much later stages. When you attack her, you still pretty much just rally your face and take her down, but her attack is a sort of like claw swipe and like a sort of weird warp forward and back, but it's mostly for visual effect. The claw swipe may as well just be any other attack. Her behavior doesn't influence how you approach her in combat. In fact, I would say the only enemy, aside from a few of the bosses, that had an attack motion that made me double check how I wanted to approach them were wizards that would eventually show up when they fired projectiles. One originally fires a projectile that just goes straight across the screen. Another one eventually does one that kind of goes in like six directions, which is interesting on a 2D stage. But he ultimately does that, and it's like, okay, well, now if I see him, I got to pretty much rush him because he's going to be really annoying to have to deal with when other guys are on the screen. But for the most part, enemies were no challenge to me at all. Like, I mean, think about, say, one of the earliest ones we've ever played, not even one of the later ones. Let's talk about, like, Streets of Rage 1, the very first Streets of Rage game. Even that game, enemies all kind of behave differently. Though I admit this game does have a whip girl, but, again, I rarely ever notice or use it. But there wasn't a lot, like, even that game had a fair bit more enemy variety in it and the way enemies behave, so you approach them differently in that game. But there's not so much. So, like, by the end of the game, I was like, okay, it's not a badly done game, but I'm also kind of done with it because nothing different's really happening. Nothing's making me go, oh, crap, this new stage is going to really get my going to rile me up. Instead, it's just like, I'm going to group these guys together. I'm going to punch them a few times. All right, moving on. I'm going to group these guys together. Going to punch them a few times. I'm going to move on. So
it's basically like a one and done kind of game.
It really is. In fact, the game is over in about 30 minutes. I never continued. And I'm going to guess is what the coins were for. Because at the end of every level, when you beat a boss, they would drop a coin. And I'd have a coin counter in the corner. But I never saw what they do. So I don't know what they do. I'm going to assume they are for continues, though. But I have no idea what they're for. It's pretty much a one and done, like, beginner's level, like, beat 'em up game. It makes me want to see what they'll do if they made another beat-em-up game. Like, taking what they learned here, expanding on it, add some more elements to it that makes it feel different. Maybe add a second player option, since they kind of allude to that in this game. But just give it some more. Just some more. Make me feel like I'm really getting into this. Like, I mean, you know, we've talked on this show before. I've done a number of beat-em-up games. Like, holy crap. This game, all I'm doing is punching and kicking, but the amount of punching and kicking I'm doing feels great. Like, it's not that I even have anything against just punching and kicking, but the game has to feel like you're doing something different. It has to make you want to keep punching and kicking those guys.
Yeah.
You know, bring you into it. And this game just didn't bring that to me. It didn't give me that oomph. But as a game, as a general game, like, design, there's one thing I had issue with as far as the game design goes. The hitboxes are really weird too. Like, I would clearly seem to dodge a guy's attack by being like up and over to the side, and the attack would still hit me. And I had no idea why that was. And since the attack didn't knock me to the ground or anything, I also was surprised to see my health go down because there was no visual impression that I took damage aside from the health going down. So that was a weird thing for me too. Again, it wasn't game breaking because, like I said, I beat the game in one sitting without continuing, but it was still there and it's still worth noting.
Yeah.
Well, but the OST is a banger.
Another good soundtrack, you said?
Yeah, I did like the OST for this.
Nice. But as it stands, $10 on Zeus Begins, what do you think?
At $10, I'm going to have to go with a deny because I feel like in the end, I'm going to play another beat-em-up for $10. If it gets a good sale and you're itching for one, couldn't hurt to give it a try just to kind of see what the creator's vision was, what the creator had in mind with his vision. But for the most part, I'd probably look elsewhere for my beat-em-up fix.
But definitely interested in a sequel.
Yes, I would like a sequel that has more done to it, more expanded on it. Basically, bring the game up to where I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to get this in. Let's go. Because that's the thing. I also love the environment. Like, I'm a big fan of Olympus and Greek mythology as a theme for any game, really.
Oh, yeah.
So, honestly, you can work with that and make the game bigger and better. Yeah, I'd come back and try it again. I'd like to see it do better.
Awesome. Well, we got one final game to talk about tonight. That is called Pantsu Hunter Back to the 90s, developed by Ascension Dream, published by Sometimes You, released August 28th on Switch, PS4, and Vita for $12.99. Share a heart-to-heart talk, watch a movie together, take a bath, remove a computer virus, help a girl in need in a tough spot, and if you're lucky, find the love of your life using the color and pattern of her panties. Pernell, tell us about Pantsu Hunter.
Well, first thing I want to say is that the title gave me the impression of, you know, Perv McGurv game, you know, ready to just get raunchy and coming in after Omega Labyrinth Life. Well, you expect me to think. But surprisingly, the game wasn't what I expected, though it does have some pervy elements. I'm not going to just lie about that. So the game exists in the world where the main character describes as a very loveless, dull universe where people just don't feel joy and love anymore. It's a dull world. Kind of feels like the present day. Anyway, he is out looking for love, and as a jack of all trades, he meets a lot of people through word of mouth job offers that come his way, and he hopes to use those word of mouth job offers as a means to meet women. So the game proceeds across a number of stages where you're meeting these people through these jobs, and your goal is to try to, get to what I would just say call the true ending of their scenario, whatever that may be. So as the game plays, they are pretty much, it's a point and click style adventure of a game where as you come into it, you have to pretty much walk. Say, for example, the first stage, you show up at her house to fix her VCR. You have an introductory conversation and you are immediately addressed with a choice of, you know, just something to say, like, do you want to go to this room or do you want to just stay here and get to work? And you can choose whichever you want. And without going into a ton beyond that, you're consistently set up with decisions to make, or not so often decisions, but more just like rooms that you're in where you have to then kind of scroll around or touch on the screen for things to interact with in hopes of deciphering, like, you know, point and click puzzle type clues or point and click puzzles to decipher the environment, break it down, and ultimately find draws or panties, because that's what they call the game, pantsu. So you might, come across a washing machine that has underwear in it, and you have to go, how do I get the underwear out? Well, there's a way to solve that riddle if you're willing to do the digging and open the drawers or pull the items or whatever to get them out. And honestly, you're ultimately also trying to score with her, too, if you can pull that off. Now, early on, the game was actually kind of fun dealing with that. I enjoyed, observing the environment. Okay, I can take this item and then use it against this, try to pull this off. But then something happened. And what happened was I exhausted damn near everything I could possibly think of for that scenario. And I still hadn't gotten the true ending or every pair of underwear or every normal ending either for that character. And that opened me up to the major fault I would have with this game, which this is pretty much going to come down to the type of person who's playing it, which is that there is no checklist to decipher, the different methodologies you've taken. So yes, there is a checklist to say what endings you've got and which underwear you found and which endings are left and which underwear are left. But there's nothing telling you what you've done to basically in the course of actions to trigger an ending. So what you'll end up doing is you'll be replaying dialogue and skipping text just to get to the sequence to try that one thing that you think might be the different thing to try before ultimately being told you didn't get that new ending you were still trying to get to. Mm. And you'll be doing a lot of this. I played this for hours. Sounds kind of lame, and I don't care. It is lame. But I happened to play it for hours, and I did not get the true ending for the first freaking person. I could have used an FAQ, but then that kind of defeats the purpose of playing it in that regard, Like, I want to solve it myself, not go to an FAQ. I can see if I was playing a fighting game, I need an FAQ to give me a cool list of moves I can try to learn and implement, or I'm playing an RPG where it's just this one boss, and maybe I'm just not deciphering a cool strategy to beat him. But in games like this, the puzzle is the game. If I don't solve the puzzle myself, what am I freaking doing? I bought a game for a puzzle to solve, but it just got tired. And which is sad, because honestly, I liked the conversations the character was having with the girl. I liked the situations where every once in a while when you would get an ending, you would also unlock a short event story, which you could access from the main menu. And that event story will provide you with some context behind the weird action. I'm going to spoil this one because it needs to be explained to give you an understanding for what the heck I'm talking about. So one of the endings in the game, kid you not, is you decide you just want to sit down in a chair that the girl has set up in her house. You die by sitting in the chair.
What?
Just die. Yeah. Sit in the chair and you die.
Okay.
When you see that, it's like, what? That doesn't even make sense. The ending is called The Cursed Chair. And you're like, why in the hell am I dead? This doesn't make any damn sense. But you also unlock a little story event. Go to the main menu, boot it up, and you can look at a story sequence called The Chair. And you learn that there's actually a reason within the game's world why you were killed by sitting in the chair. and it actually provides backstory to the girl you're trying to court, which is kind of nice. So it's a little on the bizarre side, very on the bizarre side, but it also adds a little bit of heart and personality to the character you're interacting with. I enjoyed that aspect of the game. But again, once I got sick of running all the different permutations that I could think of and still not come to the right conclusion, the game started to drag on, and the game became boring. And then I lost interest. Would I come back to it later? Maybe. But I feel like a major hurdle in a game's design when it comes to games like this is if you're going to make it based around redoing the same scenario multiple times in different ways, that you give a little bit more of an impression or understanding of what the person's doing that's affecting their current situation. Like better, I don't know, just a better visual understanding. Like even as far as items go, every once in a while you'll get an item, you'll pick it up off the ground. And while I admit the scenarios, when done perfectly or even not, are fairly short, it still would have been nice if there was like a means to look, open up an inventory screen and say, you're holding glass cleaner, you're holding a mop. I don't know, just let me know what I picked up. But no. Once you've picked it up, you just have to remember you're holding it, because there's nothing to show you what you're holding. The OST is good. That's been a weird thing about this episode. Every game I've played has had good music in it. Like, I've liked all the music. This game has a very soft and relaxing OST to it. Non-stress. But it's just that element. And there was another thing that was striking me, too, which, honestly, if the developer's listening, he'll probably laugh and go, well, there's your mistake, Gumbo. But, so there was an item that existed in the main room. I don't want to spoil exactly what the items are, but there was an item that existed in the main room that I wanted to take with me to the other room to use in a place that seemed like it could use it. However, I never could find a dialogue option that would allow me to traverse the other room after getting the first item. Like, I always had to go to the other room at the very beginning of the scenario, and I can't go there after denying my opportunity to go in the first place. And I don't know what triggers that. It's driving me nuts trying to figure it out. I said, my gumbos, I'm done. But I bet that's probably one of the solutions. Like, if you just figure that out, you'll solve it, because that's the missing piece of the puzzle, sucker.
Maybe.
So, but by that token, I am going to say, don't let my description dissuade you if you are a fan of point-and-click adventure-style games. Because even though there are some typos in the text, I did feel as though overall the voiceover of the character, the girls are fully voiced for the most part. And it's kind of nice to hear them talking before, you know, you hear them for the same line for the umpteenth time. But early on, it's kind of nice to hear them actually have dialogue for the characters. And they're actually do a good job of expressing the personalities and emotional state of the girls during situations. Like when you're doing something ridiculous, the girl sounds like she's genuinely appalled by you doing something ridiculous. It was a nice touch instead of just like, dull, like, you know, we just got the janitor to come in and read a few lines type of voiceovers that I've seen in a number of games over the years.
This was
not that. So, I mean, honestly, you may come into this game and have better luck than I did with solving the puzzles, which means that you won't have the issue I had of solving the puzzle for the umpteenth time and not getting the ending I want. Instead, you'll solve the puzzles and get through it, because that is literally the game. And I mean, I feel like I did a good job of describing it in general. Like, when you're not stuck with the repetition, you do get interesting dialogue, weird scenarios that aren't perverse. Not too far. There is panties. You are looking for underwear. And you find underwear in weird ways. Honestly, very weird ways. I'm going to flat out state that. There's some weird ones, like puzzles that, like Resident Evil style puzzles in a girl's apartment. Like, how is that even there? Why is that even there? I don't fucking know. But, I mean, you are looking for underwear, and when you find the underwear, there's a menu that describes them. It's like, hey, these are polka dot undies. That means she's got a sincere heart and a warm personality. In what fucking universe is that? In what world is, you know, tiger striped drawers a sign of a woman who's good with money? I don't know.
I don't know either.
It's the secret of the pantsu hunter. He knows, and he ain't telling.
I guess so, but you're going to be telling me $13 on this. What do you think?
I'm going to give it a try, because, like I said, the mechanics were sound. I was enjoying it up until the frustration kicked in, which means you may not suffer that from that frustration, which will make the game more appealing to you, in which case I say give it a go.
I'm guessing your pick of the week would be Rogue Singularity?
Yes, indeed it would be.
That's
a bite.
Kind of easy to tell this week.
Actually, Ponsu Hunter. I just like draws.
Oh, I know you do, Purnell. But that is it for this episode. Purnell, thank you as always for coming on, chatting with these games, and chatting with me and all that other fun stuff. Thanks to everyone who came on, did their thing on this episode. A lot of cool games to talk about. I know I want to check out Rad myself.
Ooh, I want to check out Rad myself.
I know. Tim covered that one. He had a little mixed reaction on it, but I still want to check it out myself because it's Double Fine.
It's kind of weird because I'm like, the episode's already over. He's already reviewed it, but I haven't heard that review yet because it's not out yet. Did he deny it? Did he try it? Did he butt?
You're going to have to listen and find out.
Do, do, do. Do. I'm teasing, but not. One thing I wanted to mention about the Panzer Hunter, which I did think was kind of cool, is it takes place in the 90s, as the title describes. So there's like a certain 90s aesthetic to it, which I had honestly kind of forgot when I first booted the game up. So the first level, again, you go to our house to fix our VCR. It's a VHS player. I'm like, what the hell are you talking about, VHS player? We're not gonna have VHS players anymore. Oh, right, the 90s.
Yeah.
And they talk about the anime Lum, and she has like Sailor Moon posters on her wall. I was like, hey, cool. I know that stuff. Yeah, that's the 90s. Orange Juice and Sailor Moon. Yeah, that's the 90s.
So it's for nostalgia freaks, too, I guess.
Yeah, there's a hint of that in there.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, that is it for this episode. I thanked everyone already. Purnell, you just had to drag things on and
it's what
make
I
it
do.
Longer. Do you have what any final words to end the show?
Yes. In honor of Pansu Hunter, I recommend everyone who hasn't seen it yet watch Ranma 1/2 because it is very fitting to the theme of that game.